Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. My name is Melitza and I'm your host. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours that we have. You have young children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to Raising Playful Tots, show number 36. Thanks for listening to the show today. If you're new here, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room in the ball pit over here. Last week, the show had Maya of memtales.com talking about literacy, storytelling, and crafts in a two-part interview. This week's show, I have the second half of the interview with Yanni Nicole talking about Waldorf and Steiner play. You can catch the first part of her show on show number 30. I'll also be sharing the weekly find about 50p audio stories to download. I'll be right back after this short break.
Healthy, fresh Art Mart.
This week, enjoy Art Smart products your family will eat up. One serving of Van Gogurt contains the live and active culture your kids need. Buy one, get higher test scores free. And nothing satisfies a child's craving for self-expression like Tchaikovsky's Nutcrackers, now with more music and dance in every bite. Try original flavor or new Sugar Plum Fairy. Feed your kids the arts. Visit AmericansForTheArts.org to learn how. The arts. Ask for more.
Yes, you're totally right. Yes, you're right. You mentioned some baby and toddler ones there and a few preschool play activities. I was interested to hear that you said you don't start formal schooling until 7. So between that 4, 5, 6 time, which is, I would say, the average time that many listeners will be familiar with their children going to formal school, can you explain what those children would be doing since they're not in formal school?
If they're in a Steiner kindergarten, they would be playing with the other children. They would be doing some activities because there are activities on each day, such as painting, drawing. They have access to crayons and cutting equipment, that sort of thing, scissors and so on. A lot of woodwork, a lot of making things, boats, and cranes or weaving looms, things like that, doing their own weaving. The older children would be doing knitting, cord making, but mostly play and a lot of play outside.
Great. That's a lovely thing to see, that they're going to be doing a lot of, a big variety of different things. It gives them a chance to really expand, I think.
The other thing is, because we have mixed age groups from 3 to 6 plus in one group, it has that same sort of family feel. So the older children look after the little ones look up to the older ones, and when they do a puppet show, for instance, the older ones will end up doing the puppet show for the younger children. The younger children will happily sit there holding their dolls and watching. Then prepare for the puppet show. The puppet show, generally, when they do it, it's a lot of preparation and very little time for the show itself.
Yeah.
It's all building the scenery and making the puppets and all that sort of thing, and making the puppet show and doing the music. So there's an awful lot of creativity that goes into it. But the older ones and the younger ones have a different way of being involved in the same activity.
That's great. Let's move on to another book that you've written, Bringing the Steiner-Waldorf Approach to Your Early Years Practice. And you talk in there about the three R's, rhythm, repetition, and reverence. Can you explain
Yes.
the reverence part?
Right. Well, the reverence part is really reverence for four main things for the child. As adults and as other children, we need to have reverence for each other, for the children that we're working with, or that we're bringing up as a parent for our own children. We do that anyway. We always revere them in some way or another. But when I'm talking about reverence, it is more than just care for the physical child standing in front of us. It is really care for that child who has brought gifts with them. Whether we say they brought these gifts from a spiritual world or whether they are inherited gifts, however we see it, the child is more than the physical that stands in front of us. And my view is that it is our duty and our joy as adults, whether we're parents or carers of those children or teachers, to help each child unwrap those gifts and to continue to help them to do that as long as we can. And I like to think even that as adults we're still unwrapping the gifts that we bring. You know, that we each come with a bag of gifts and we continue to unwrap them all our lives and find new things that we're capable of. But for adults taking care of a child, I think it's just such a joy to watch them unfold and to develop, to see them really as something so special with all these gifts that they bring with them. But that reverence goes further. It means also to take care of each other, to love each other. That means taking care of our friends and in social relationships. If we're working with imitation, we need to also take care of our friends as adults and to show how we work and interact with colleagues and friends, always trying to work with care and love. And then also for ourselves, that we give ourselves time and space. We as adults need it and children need it too. And then to take care of the environment. And it is with a certain reverence to really care for what we have around us, to care for our toys, to put them away, to tidy properly, so that everything has its own place, so that we take care of it to the extent that it's polished or mended, so that we don't wear torn clothes or, you know, our windows are clean. Do you know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah.
And that we recycle and we, you know, we put leftover scraps out for the birds. It's really a care for everything that we come into touch with. And I like to call that reverence. Reverence for nature, reverence for ourselves, reverence for each other, and reverence for the child.
That's a nice approach because there's so many times, I think, nowadays when things get torn or broken, they're just thrown away and that's the end. And I know even with my own children, things are described as, well, that's old because they've had it for a week or a month or we bought them last year. And there is not this sense of renewal that, well, it doesn't matter. We can reuse it. We can, you know, use it in a different way or mend it even.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely a
problem that I think that has crept in with this, the society that we have of buying and doing things, that we have more disposable income to buy more things than probably we've ever had, and the children don't appreciate it in the same way. So I like for what you're talking about with the reverence part of showing how you can mend something. I was showing my son, I was darning a pair of socks the other day just to show him that you can do that, and he was just like, why can't you just buy a new pair? And I said, well, I can and I will, but, you know, I just wanted to show you that you can do this. And he was just fascinated, but was just like, they're just old. He couldn't see the purpose in doing that. And I was saddened that I still remember patching trousers, and I think he would die if I said to him, let's patch your trousers. It was just like, just get a new pair.
It's so difficult, isn't it? It is so difficult that even in our generation, that this change has come about where we live in a throwaway society.
Yes.
If you don't like something, you don't eat it. You know, you just throw it away and you buy something else. It's very sad.
Yes.
It is very sad. And that's why I like the idea of taking care of everything to the extent that it can be reused and take, you know. For instance, if you really take care of the food you eat, you prepare it with love, you sit down at a table, you wait until everybody is ready to eat. And in our kindergartens, we usually say a little blessing on the food.
Nice.
A thank you for the food that we have to eat. And then we eat it all, and when it's finished, any scraps go out for the birds, and we wash up together and take care of it all, clean the table. Sweep underneath so that it is as we would like to have it the next time we use it.
Yes. That's great. Everything starts and goes all the way through to the end. There's not.
That's right.
People don't move off. It's not the mum or the dad that's just washing up and the children have gone off to do something else. It's a whole family approach, or a whole group approach.
It is. It is a whole family approach. And that's why it is, when I say this final order of approach can be quite difficult, it is because it is about taking care and it takes a lot of time and effort to take care to that extent.
Today I'm talking to Jenny Nicol, consultant specializing in Steiner Waldorf. She's also the author of Creative Play for Your Baby, Steiner Waldorf Expertise and Toy Projects for 3 months to two-year-olds. Can you tell us a little bit more about storytelling and the puppetry in the early years using this approach?
We have a very oral tradition. We talk a lot to our children. What we say has to be worthy of being said and being listened to. So we don't talk for the sake of it. We don't question children particularly, and we don't take their learning on by talking to them. So it's not a total questioning. Would you like to do this? How would you like that? What about this? What about that? It's very much we speak when it's necessary to speak. But it is an oral tradition. We don't encourage television or other PC or electronic gadgetry. And we feel that the human voice is very important, because if you can learn to communicate and you can learn to speak well, you can actually do almost anything. It is the basis for learning to read and write. It's the basis for everything. A good vocabulary is very important for children. So we tell stories a lot. And we, although books are obviously around us all the time, the books, as I mentioned before when I was talking about reverence, are very well cared for. They have their proper place and their proper time. But we like to think that we're going to be enlivening the imagination of the child by allowing them to create their own pictures when we tell stories to them. So we use storytelling a lot, and the storytelling is imaginative. We can make up stories, particularly for the younger children as well. If we're very creative, and I think fathers are exceptionally good at this, at telling stories later on for the children. When I say later on, they're not so good at the little ones because they get terribly imaginative. And quite sort of sci-fi sort of stories, fantasy stories. And the older children love those stories from dads in that way. But for the simple stories for young children, we can tell them very simply and very easily. And it does, as I say before, it enlivens their imagination and they build their own pictures internally for these stories.
That's lovely to think about, because as an oral tradition, I don't think we retell stories in the same way. We rely more on books. Well, I know certainly in our family we do. Sometimes a family story will come up and we'll tell some story that's funny or appropriate for the time, but we tend to rely on books. We have a book time that we'll sit down and we'll all read stories together and they have a book area. But to actually do the oral storytelling is something that we don't do as much. And certainly with the puppets, we just recently bought a puppet, a little puppet stand, and that's left out. And that's had a lot of play recently. They've come across and done lots of things. I didn't realize how much that they would have enjoyed that. I would have got it earlier if I'd realized.
Puppetry is such a joy with children, because they can really begin to use their imaginations for that. But with storytelling, a lot of people think they can't do it. Oh, I'll never be able to tell a story. I can't learn stories to tell, or I don't know how to make up stories. But actually, we all can.
Yeah.
It's so easy. It's stories about ourselves, and those are the ones that children love best.
Yeah.
I always talk about it and refer to my youngest daughter called Ali. Her name is Ali. And we used to have Ali stories at bedtime. And she'd always say, "Mummy, tell me an Ali story. Tell me an Ali story." and it was always a story about what happened to her during the day. Very simple, just a recapitulation of the day. But sometimes one could take it further, and that's the easiest way to start. And then you develop it yourself, and you start thinking, but I can make up a story about Ali. Ali could do something exciting. Ali could do something a little bit fantastic. Or you can use it in a remedial way. For instance, tomorrow Ali's going to go to the dentist, so I can make up a story about going to the dentist and what it will be like. And it can work as a form of preparation for a child, or if they're going into hospital, something like that. So one can use stories in all sorts of ways. There are many, many stories available for helping children who are afraid of things, or for helping children who need remedial stories to help them play better with other children, or so on. Instead of telling them off, tell them a story about how two children did play well together. After a little hiccup, that sort of thing. So we use these stories an awful lot in our homes and in our kindergartens. And I always find the less stimulation you have at bedtime, the better. And a told story helps the child to sink into sleep easier than a book would do, which could be stimulating.
Yes. Very nice. Can you recommend some resources to learn more about this approach, because I'm sure many listeners are now curious about how that they can do this in their homes or where they can find places that they can take their children to?
I certainly can, but I think probably the best thing is to recommend some websites.
Great.
Because no matter where you are in the world, you'll be able to access it through links. Would that be easier for you? I mean,
yes.
there is one excellent book that I would like to recommend. And it's called You Are Your Child's First Teacher, What Parents Can Do With and For Their Children from Birth to Age 6. And it's by Rahima Baldwin Dancy. It's a Hawthorne Press edition. And it follows very much the Steiner approach for parents.
Okay.
That's a very good basic first book. There are many, many Steiner Waldorf books. The ones particularly to do with the Steiner Waldorf approach are www.waldorfearlychildhood.org. That is the American WECAN site. It's Waldorf Early Childhood in America site.
Yeah.
And there they have a lot of links to other sites. Another one that is child-friendly and Waldorf-friendly but is not a Waldorf site is the Alliance for Childhood.
Ah, yes.
And many, many people find that site very useful to find research and to find other information on play in particular, because the Alliance for Childhood, although it was initiated by Waldorf people, is a general site.
Right.
And that's AllianceForChildhood.org is the American one, and the English one is AllianceForChildhood.org.uk.
Okay.
And they also have some excellent articles and links and recommended reading.
Okay.
And then in England, it's www.steinerwaldorf.org.
That gives everybody a chance to go and find out a little bit more about the information that you've been giving. Would you let us know now what type of family you think would be suitable for the Steiner-Waldorf approach? Do you have to be a certain type of family, or would you say that anybody could try?
I think you do have to be a certain type of family. I think you have to really see the child as central to the home. See the child as more than the physical that stands before us. So really to approach everything that surrounds that child and the child itself with the sense of reverence that I was talking about before. Mm-hmm. To be worthy of imitation by the child in everything we do and are. And if possible, to have as little screen time as possible. And to allow the child lots and lots of time for creative free play, creative activities in the home with the parents, with the carers. Yeah, no screen time if possible. Lots of nature play. Apart from that, it's absolutely perfect for every child.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, totally. It'll be great for the children. It's, I think for parents, many of them won't be used to this approach and may have heard of it or never heard of this approach before. So it's always nice to know before you jump into something the expectations that are there for you as a parent. Because in Montessori, for example, there are many, many Montessori schools that are about, and people seem quite familiar with the way in which Montessori is done. Of course, it's not done exactly as Maria Montessori had it at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But it's changed, and it's similar in some schools, and some schools don't adhere as much and just use the name. But, you know, with a new approach, and I think Steiner Waldorf will be a new approach to many listeners, that it's nice to know what the expectations are right from the outset.
I think you're right, actually. And I think a lot of parents who come to a Steiner kindergarten, for instance, are sometimes taken aback by the fact that when their child goes to play with somebody who's been in for a little bit longer than others, there isn't a television which dominates the house, or that they don't have the radio on all the time, and that the activities and the play that goes on is very child-centered and creative, and that the toys are different. They don't have a lot of plastic toys around.
Yes, that would be very different. So, no, thank you for sharing that. And just to close with, can you share the titles of your book? Because your books are very practical and just right for this audience. We have an audience that are listening that primarily have children that are birth to 5 years old, and so your toddler book and your baby book, I think, would be great.
Yes, well, I'm not sure about in America, but I know in England the baby book is out of print at the moment and is being reprinted. The Creative Play for Your Toddler is still in print, and they are full of projects to do on your own or with the child, and certainly for the child. And they are really very, very simple projects, like making a little doll, some puppets, a little riding horse, that sort of thing, baby trains, blocks, wall hangings, and simple crafts and activities. But also in the books, we do cover a lot about play, imagination, creativity for the child and for the baby.
Brilliant. And can we get those books in any major bookstore?
Yep, and at Amazon.
Brilliant.
Have other books which I've written, Christmas Stories Together and Celebrating Christmas Together, which I wrote with my mother many years ago, actually, but they're very popular stories for storytelling. And I would have liked to also recommend a book on Steiner Waldorf education as well, which I'd forgotten about earlier, which is called Free to Learn, Introducing Steiner Waldorf Early Childhood Education. It's a Hawthorne Press book by Lynn Oldfield. But the book, certainly that I recommended earliest, You Are Your Child's First Teacher, I would say is the main book for any parents who are interested in this. And also they would find it very exciting. It's full of ideas and new ways of thinking about bringing up children.
Perfect. Thank you so much for bringing this information to us.
Well, thank you for asking me. I've enjoyed talking to you.
It's been really interesting learning about this approach and how we can, and there's just a different way of doing things. So thanks very much. I'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, this is Kari in ActiveKidsClub.com, and you are listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Today's weekly find is from Elaine of littlesheeplearning.blogspot.com, and I saw her tweet, and she tweeted about @StoryMouse. So I had to go and have a look, and I saw that @StoryMouse was selling 50p stories, and I thought, oh, I just have to have a look at this. Well, the funny thing was, I just finished reading The Emperor's New Clothes to the big guy, And he was retelling the story to his teddy and practicing retells. And I thought, well, while he's practicing that, because he was going to come back and retell me the story of the Emperor's New Clothes, I'd have a quick look on Twitter. When I looked on Twitter, there Elaine had tweeted about Story Mouse. And when I went to their main website, they had 50p audiobook downloads. And what story was there? The Emperor's New Clothes. So I had to just download that. So I downloaded it, and once the big guy had told me the story, I got him to listen to this new version of the story. Oh, and he loved it. You've got to listen to it if you've got a chance. Let me find the link for you. Okay, the link is here. Here it is. It's www.thestorymouse.com. And if you go there, right on the bottom of their page there, you can actually click on The Emperor's New Clothes, and you can hear just a sample of this story. Now, of course, you know the story really well, but oh, you'll be really surprised. I love the way that they did this. The swindlers' names. I actually tweeted and said that, because the swindlers' names are really funny. I'm not going to spoil it. I want you to listen to it. I don't know if they're still 50p. I think they were running a special at the time. But if you're looking for really good audio stories with lots of accents and great voices and embellished stories that just make you smile, then you really need to check out thestorymouse.com. We've downloaded some of the other favorites that we remember, the Elves and the Shoemaker, the Hare and the Tortoise, the Three Little Pigs, and the boys really love it. So now we have Smories. If you remember, we talked about that some time ago, smories.com, where they listen to some audio stories. And now they have thestorymouse.com, where they can buy and download really great stories to listen to. So I'd really advise us all to go and try that one. Hey, I haven't asked how you've all been doing with play this week. So did you manage to squeeze a lot in? Or have you found it a little difficult like we have this week? Because, okay, it's back to school week for us, so we'll be going back to school this week. So it's just been busy. I mean, as soon as I finish recording this podcast, I really need to get going with these labels, those iron-on things that you put onto every piece of clothing and shoes and equipment that they have so you don't lose it. But we've managed to get in quite a few play dates this week. They have quite a few playmates that come by and knock on the door and say, can you come out to play? So that's really good for them. So we've been squeezing as many of those in before we get going, and we've had to cut back on some of the playtime in the evening to get us back into that routine of going to school. So, I don't know, back to early bedtimes and getting up early again in the morning so that they have a chance to play during the day and they're not tired. Tired, tired, tired. Hey, how did you find Raising Playful Tots today? Did you find it through iTunes? You know, way back when you first subscribed. If you like the show, I'd like you to consider writing a review for us on iTunes and letting other people know what you feel about the podcast. That would be a great way of sharing how you like Raising Playful Tots and telling your friends at the same time. Okay, I guess that wraps it up for today. Thanks for joining us, and pop on over to the blog for show notes for the links of the things I've talked about, like thestorymouse.com. Pop on over to the blog, that's www.raisingplayfultots.com. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 36 for the week of the 29th of August 2010. Come on over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime.